Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
So we're in May as we record this. The last weekend was the first weekend in May, and the number one show on Netflix was an origin story. The whole show, it was a movie, not a real origin story, but a total fabrication of an origin story for comedy purposes. It was a movie called Unfrosted. And this movie's important for copywriters for a couple of reasons. The first is the power of a product name. The movie was a totally fictional story about how Kellogg's popular toaster pastries became a hit in grocery stores. It's hardly a spoiler to tell you the name they settled on that led to the big bucks, Pop-Tarts, Kellogg's Pop-Tarts. But how they got there is a big part of the totally made-up plot. Also, there's a great cameo by actors John Hamm and John Slattery, who play the two leading guys in the series Mad Men. And in the new Netflix movie, they play these out-of-touch New York ad men who come up with totally wrong product names. Later in the movie, on TV, they hear the name Pop-Tarts, and one of them grumbles in an admission of defeat, "That'll sell." So that's an important lesson for copywriters. Got to get the name right. But there's a second lesson that's maybe even more important, since copywriters don't often have control over the product name anyway. And that is this. People love origin stories. Mm-hmm. Yet I've found a lot of times copywriters don't really know how to put an effective one together. And once they do, they don't know how to use it. We'll cover that in the show today. But first, a message I'm sure the lawyers would love for you to hear. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. Most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. All right, so origin stories are part of our everyday life in this world. Think of a high school girl who's having a first date with a high school boy. What do her parents want to know from him before they give the okay? Basically, they want to know his origin story. Of course, they won't say it that way. What they'll do is ask a million annoying questions. But in their clumsy and well-meaning way, what they want to do is get the raw ingredients of an origin story of the boy who wants to go out with their daughter. What kind of family he came from, what he's done with his life up till now, what he's doing now. In short, how he became who he is. And just as important, who is he anyway? This is not unusual in our world. When you apply for a job, they want a resume. What's a resume? Basically, a business-focused origin story. Or a new boss comes into a department at work. She calls a meeting and talks about where she's been, how she ended up here, before she starts with goals and plans. That, too, is an origin story. And circling back to entertainment, every screenwriter needs a backstory for their protagonist of the story. Now, what's a backstory? It's basically an origin story. Sometimes the backstory is so fascinating, it becomes part of the screenplay, and then they call it an origin story. A famous example is the original Spider-Man. Peter Parker was bitten by a spider as a teenager, and he morphed into a superhero with unusual spider-like powers. It's powerful because it's a good story, but also, again, let me say this, people love origin stories.
I'm just going to add 2 cents to the Peter Parker story. Part of it was he was a selfish teenager who was self-absorbed and only out for what he could get, and then he let a criminal go and said, hey, that's not my problem, and then that criminal later killed his Uncle Ben, and he had to watch his Uncle Ben die. And that was a big part of his origin story too, was he realized, hey, I could have prevented this by not being self-centered. I could have done my civic duty. I have the power, and I didn't, and something horrible happened. So from now on, I'm going to do it. And so that also is a big part of relatability and getting you on the hero side and realizing, oh man, if I had these type of powers, what would I do? What would my life be like? And so a little bit of a side tangent, but a good origin story can also make you relate with the hero if they had to go through something that you can empathize with. And I think in marketing, that empathy is a key factor as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I agree with you. The story needs to be relatable. And I think part of the way, maybe a main way it becomes relatable, is that there's a transformation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Peter Parker started out as selfish, went through all this Tsuris, and then he comes out, you know, serving others, you know, doing things to help the people who need to be defended and things like that. So, yeah, great points. Now, let's talk about copy. And the other thing is, that's a very emotional story, right? I mean, you know, the death of an uncle and a criminal and selfishness, those are all very emotional things. And so an origin story is not just like a list of things that happened. There's got to be some feeling in it too. All right. So, and true in copy too, origin stories are equally important, but they serve a different purpose. True, they tell the reader where something came from. Also true, people want to know that. But a good origin story in copy does more than that, and this is really important. A good origin story is persuasive. Mm. It persuades by providing some proof or some narrative or some fascinating information that adds additional credibility to the person, product, or service it's about. Marketing origin stories do resemble dramatic stories in a few ways, though. They usually have an inciting incident. Something happened, an uncle dies, for example, or as you'll see later, a woman starts feeling uncomfortable when she's cooking, and you'll see that later in the show or hear that later. They have an inciting incident, something that happened to get the origin process started. They usually include struggle or conflict, and that is, it wasn't always easy to get to where the person or the business is today, and they end up with some kind of impressive victory or other result. Mm. That is all the time and effort that went into creating the person's expertise or the business was worth it after all. But the big difference with marketing origin stories is that they convey tremendous value. They show the unique usefulness at what's at the end of the story. And in that way, they're tremendously persuasive.
I see very frequently origin stories used this way. Guy was in the military and they were dealing with mosquitoes and they were in a really rough terrain and they came up with a new invention to get rid of mosquitoes in 1 minute. Or a guy was working at a drone company and created a drone that was way more effective and way less expensive and had to fight the board because they didn't want people being able to get their hands on the technology. And so he went rogue. And in that instance, you've got the transformation, you've got the hurdle that they're overcoming, and then you also get the, oh, it was a professor at a drone company or an engineer or it was a guy in the military, and that's where the credibility booster comes in as well. So all of those things, if people watch the ads that do really well, they'll notice those things popping up in the origin story.
Yeah, really good point. And so I want to say, in my book, The Persuasion Story Code, I show how to create four different kinds of origin stories. And that's too many to give Copywriters Podcast style coverage here today. So let's focus on one that you can use for business, and we'll go in depth on that. That's the inventor's origin story. But just so you know, the other three types of origin stories are the qualifications track record story, the discovery story, and the failure success story. Those are all good too. But let's turn back to the inventor's origin story. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you two sets of questions to create this story. And then we'll come up with an origin story, which I developed using those questions for a company that does not yet exist and may never exist. But it's good enough to show you how to use an inventor's origin story. So here's the first set of questions. If you're doing this at home, write out the answers, or you could speak them out and get them transcribed, I guess. Use these for research and get more information than you think you'll end up using. Get as much as you can. So, four questions. One, when was the moment and or what was the goal that prompted you to create something new? Okay. Question number two, what had to be different about it? Three, what did you end up with? And four, this is important, why is it better than anything else out there? Okay, so you've got all of this bundle of information. You got detailed answers to these questions, and you use that information to answer these next questions, which will create the first draft of your persuasion inventor's origin story. One, what was the worst part? And see, this is where we get emotional, right? What was the worst part of the way things were regarding the problem you eventually set out to solve? Two, what happened that made you decide to create something new? Three, what were the highlights of your invention creation process? Not every freaking detail, but just the highlights, okay? And four, what did you end up with, and what is or are its most important unique benefit or benefits? Okay? So four, I show you how we applied that, and how do you respond to that?
I like the first question on both of these sets because it helps me relate. Oh, I'm going through that. I know how that feels. I've been in that exact same situation. The next part about what was different about it or why was this better than anything else out there, if I'm dealing with the problem, I've probably tried a couple of solutions and I've probably been let down by them if I'm still in the market. And so knowing that you also have taken that into account in the creation of your solution goes a long way as well. So that hits two major emotional things, the frustration that I was dealing with when I was going through the problem, and then also the frustration I was dealing with when I tried to solve the problem. Those are two key points that draw me into your story and make me be able to relate with you a lot better.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. I had not thought of that, but I agree with you 100%. All right. So our business to be is positioned as a premium potholder company. Now here's our origin story. When I first started cooking for my new family, something felt off. It wasn't the recipes. I liked what I cooked and I did a good job with the food. Everyone was happy with the meals. Now this might sound weird, but it was the potholders. My mother had the most beautiful potholders. I remember her proudly bringing the roast to the table, and the potholders were the finishing touch every time. The potholders I had were so thin and made so cheaply, I was worried I would burn my hands someday. I don't know how many times in the washer they would survive. I wanted potholders like Mom's. I didn't know where she had gotten them, but one day I got up the courage to ask. "Sherry," she laughed, "I made them." I didn't know how I was going to get a set like my own. She must have picked that up because she shared a heartbreaking story with me. It turned out she had wanted to be a clothing designer, but her family obligations and my father had kept her from living her dream. I asked her if she would show me how she made the potholders so I could make some for our family. "I'll do you one better," she said with a twinkle in her eye. "I'll not only show you, but we can make them together." People started to admire the potholders and ask where they could get some. After a while, we started a business. Mom was the designer and chief seamstress. I was the manager. More and more people loved our potholders, and soon we had a dozen seamstresses working for us, all staying true to Mom's exacting designs and standards. And that's how family heirloom handcrafted potholders came to be.
I love it. Down with the patriarchy.
Down with the patriarchy. Down with repressive husbands. Yes. Let the woman live her dream.
Exactly.
Power to the potholder.
I do, in all seriousness, though, that is a good story, and that would make me want to check out those potholders.
Thank you. Okay, so in this story, you can see that Sherry didn't feel right about the potholder she was using when she cooked for her family. And this led to a series of events, which ended up with the creation of Family Heirloom Handcrafted Potholders Company. Now, the neat thing about inventors' origin stories like this one is they create instant credibility and value. So, with a few tweaks, you can use them at different points in your sales letter. And I want to point this out because most people think, well, if you have an origin story, that's basically your opening story, and that's really a nightmare story or a hero's journey. No, it's not. It's different. And you can use it in, I'm going to show you four different places you can use it with equal effectiveness, okay? So first, the obvious one, as an opening story in a sales letter.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you had a headline like this. The surprising problem I faced when I started cooking for my family. And from there, you could go right into the story as is. When I first started cooking for my new family, something felt off. It wasn't the recipes. I liked what I cooked, and I did a good job with the food. Everyone was happy with the meals. Now, this might sound weird, but it was the potholders. My mother had the most beautiful potholders, and I remember her proudly bringing the roast to the table, and the potholders were the finishing touch every time. And at the end of the story, it reads, more and more people loved our potholders, and soon we had a dozen seamstresses working for us, all staying true to Mom's exacting designs and standards. And that's how Family Heirloom Handcrafted Potholders came to be. And from there, it'd be easy to take the focus off the origin of the company and onto the prospect. You would transition into talking directly to the prospect about their cooking and the difference quality heirloom potholder could make in their experience and for their family. And my point here is you can use an origin story right at the start of your copy pretty effectively. But, and this is where a lot of people screw up, and where I used to screw up, until I remembered something I learned back in New York from my bosses who had learned it over Time Inc., which was like the royalty of magazine writing. The first line of the copy needs to follow exactly what the headline says. You don't like go off in a different direction. And then the last part where you need to transition very smoothly from the end of the story. You don't want to go, and that's how the company came to be. Now that I've told you the origin story, no, you don't do it that. You know, you just keep it going as a regular conversation. Mm-hmm. You have any thoughts about that?
I will say that going back to the example of the drone video or the mosquito repellent video, a lot of times people use this origin story not just as the start of their copy, but especially in video ads, it can be the whole ad, and then it can be, now to learn more, go click here. And so it is the start of the copy, but it's also kind of segmented or siloed off as its own piece of content that leads you into the rest, because it's hard not to want to hear more after I hear a story like that.
You got me. That is a fifth way to use it. You can use it as a complete video ad, and if it's a compelling story like that, it will generate leads very nicely into the main copy. So thanks for that. All right. So let's look at, well, I'm going to say now a third way, because we've already got two. A third way you can use the story. So if you're familiar with the problem, agitate, solve format, after your opening, where you aggravate the problem of feeling uncomfortable with your potholders or in the kitchen or when you serve food, then you could put the subhead in, who am I and what right do I have to tell you this? That's kind of familiar, right? Mm-hmm. Old Dan Kennedy standby. So you would follow that subhead, who am I, with a slight modification to the story. You simply add to the top of it, I had the same problem myself, and it was ruining family dinners for me. You see, and then you can jump right into the story. When I first started cooking for my new family, something felt off. It wasn't the recipes. I liked what I cooked, and I did a good job with the food. Everyone was happy with the meals. Now, this might sound weird, but it was the potholders. So you wouldn't have to change much else about the story besides putting the subhead above it and using it and starting it with the words you see.
Yeah. What I really like about this is that, especially with the who am I and what right do I have to tell you this, that makes it a lot of times when we're writing copy, if we're not writing with a very structured, familiar template, it's hard to transition from one piece to the next. And so if this wasn't going to go at the very top of the copy, like it might naturally feel, it's somewhere maybe a third down the way, having that who am I and what right do I have to tell you this followed with that slight modification, it makes the transition feel a lot more smooth. And that's a key thing when you're a copywriter. You don't want to have those jerky, hard right turns in the middle of your copy. You want the smooth transitions, and this does that for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Transitions come pretty easily to me because I'm known among my friends for changing the subject all the time, but not out of embarrassment or anything. But I realize people do have a hard time with that. So yeah, thanks for pointing that out. All right. A third way to use the story is near your close, and that's because your origin story, so at the close, all the way at the end, your origin story provides value and credibility wherever you use it in your copy. And so you could have this whole thing without ever talking about your company or your own story, and then you could then end with, you might wonder why having high-quality handcrafted potholders is so important. Well, let me tell you how having a really good one, having really good ones changed my life in the kitchen and at the table, and then go right into the story as it is. When I first started cooking for my new family, something felt off. It wasn't the recipes. I liked what I cooked and I did a good job with the food. Everyone was happy with the meals. Now, this might sound weird. It was the potholders.
What I love about this particular approach is I found the more notable your brand is, the easier it is to start off talking about yourself. Introducing these new shoes from Nike. Our famous basketball player had this problem. But if I'm not familiar with your brand, I need to first feel like you get me before I care about you, your product, or your origin story. And so if you go through and you identify all of the things that I'm feeling, and then you close it up with, by the way, this is how we came. This is why we get you so much, because we went through the same thing. Let me tell you the story about how that, for a brand that I'm not familiar with, is so much more powerful than leading off with, hey, let us tell you about us. Instead, hey, let us tell you how we feel. We understand how you feel. And then once we've done that, let us tell you a little bit about ourselves. I'm much more apt to listen. And then that credibility boost at the end of the sales letter is enough to push me over the edge.
Yeah, so let's boil that down into a simple rule, which is overly generalized, but it helps you remember. If you're famous, you can put your origin story at the top. If you're not that well known, you might need to put it at the bottom.
There you go.
All right. Finally, the fifth way you can use it is not as part of your copy, but as a separate page. You can put it on, if you have an e-com site where you're not using a lot of copy on the sales page, where you're selling something people want, you know, including, of course, could be potholders. You could, and all you have is a picture and a brief description and then a buy button on the sales page. You could put the inventor's origin story on the about page. And this is, that would be much more compelling than what you see on most about pages.
Yeah. Just to kind of hammer home the point, when we first get into copywriting, a lot of people say, well, start off your message with an origin story, start it off with a credibility booster, a relatability thing. And that works, but you've given a lot of examples of where maybe it goes on the about page. Maybe it's the ad that gets them to the sales page. Maybe it's towards the bottom of the sales page. It doesn't have to be in one spot, but however you use it, you do need to know how to use it properly.
Yeah, so let's just review all those different ways again. Obviously, at the opening, maybe in a what right do I have to tell you section about a third of the way down, maybe in a video that leads someone to a sales page, like a YouTube video, maybe as part of your close, and or maybe on the about page on an e-commerce website. Because people are always interested in who you are and how you got there when they're buying a product or service. An origin story is a persuasive and interesting way to tell that. So we've covered a lot today, but it was about only one kind of origin story, the inventor's origin story. And as I mentioned and detailed out, we have three other kinds of origin stories in my book, The Persuasion Story Code, as well as templates and examples and questions like you saw for more than 20 other kinds of persuasion stories. And if you don't already have a copy, I'd really like to urge you to check it out. It's on Amazon, and we'll put a link in the show notes, The Persuasion Story Code.
All right. And if you enjoyed this episode, you got a bunch of value out of it. We have 370 other episodes over at Copywriters Podcast. You can find out our origin story by going through all of those episodes. And you can check that out over at copywriterspodcast.com. While you're there, make sure that you subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And David, anything else before we're out of here?
No, I think I have shot my wad.
Again with the patriarchy. All right. Until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Stop using the hero's journey in your sales copy. My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get The Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com. So get your copy today. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.